Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks who reach out. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Tap into the pulse of today's youth this hour here on 411 Teen, spotlighting male teen health issues with Dr. Dudley Danoff. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Although adolescent males have as many health issues and concerns as adolescent females, adolescent male health receives little attention. The majority of adolescents seeking health care are female. However, there is increasing interest in addressing the needs of young men. Dr. Dudley Danoff addresses the dramatic changes teenage males often struggle with when a child becomes a man. Though the transition to manhood can be an exciting experience, teen boys go through so many changes in such a short period of time, they may feel overwhelmed and lost. Dr. Danoff raises the awareness about male health issues, providing them with the best information to guide them into adulthood. He joins 411 Teen this hour via phone from Los Angeles, California. Dr. Danoff, welcome to 411 Teen.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the information that you may share. I know it will be just invaluable. Dr. Danoff, it seems like, and we hear it so often, that we know that teenage girls have a lot of reasons for seeking health care, such as all the gynecological concerns, contraception, pregnancy. But the literature indicates that teenage males see a physician for specific reasons. Maybe they've had sports injury, for example. Would you agree with this observation?
Well, I am a urologist, mm-hmm. so I am the human plumber, and we take care of both men and women. Women have kidneys, women have bladders. What right. separates the men from the women, from the urologist's point of view, you know, a man has a penis and two testicles and a prostate, but otherwise the equipment is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when talking about adolescent, particularly sexuality, and the maturing male, we, of course, see more men in that regard, young men in that regard, than we do see young women.
Mm-hmm.
Young women, for those problems, usually address them with their gynecologist, and the boys or the young men, either with their pediatrician or as they get a little bit older and a little bit more concerned, will turn to the urologist. So we certainly see more males in my practice,
of course,
adolescent males, than we do adolescent females. But the adolescent male has lots of problems. I mean, raging hormones, tremendous changes as a boy enters puberty, development of muscle, increasing testosterone, increasing libido, pubic hair. Very, 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 very confusing to the male. So we certainly try to address that problem. To those young men in a way that they will understand it,
mm-hmm.
not too technical, not too imposing, not too scary, but that's my job.
Well, that's great. Then that's why I have you here, because I want you to share some of that information with my listening audience. When you talk about all these factors and all these changes that the young male may be experiencing, what are the factors that influence the onset and the duration of puberty in
the
male?
Certainly in a male, puberty is driven by testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So as the testes mature, the testes are the primary source of testosterone, which is the male hormone. So that drives spermatogenesis, which is the creation of sperm. It elevates the circulating serum testosterone. It adds to height, weight, muscle mass, and above all, libido. And the problem in young pubescent and entering adolescent males are, they're a walking libido machine.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially have erections 24/7. There are things driving their brain that they don't recognize, very, very difficult to control, sometimes very difficult to understand. I hear, am I normal, doctor? Is it normal to have a morning erection? Is it often to occasional ejaculate in my sleep? And all of that is very, very confusing to the adolescent male, the maturing male. And it's our job to try to explain and put all of those things in perspective.
Puberty in males occurs, approximately, 2 years later than in females? Is that correct?
Right. So you take a look at a 13-year-old boy, say he's going to his bar mitzvah, and you see he looks like a little squirty little kid, kind of shorts, scrawny, no muscles, and all the 13-year-old girls who are his classmates arrive at the party, and they're all decked out, and they're wearing brassieres, and they have all their makeup on. So it's striking to me, both as a physician and as a layperson, to see what it's like for a 13-year-old girl standing next to a 13-year-old boy. And I think the sort of ballpark figure of two years behind is probably not inaccurate. So I would see most boys, 13, 14, 15, those are the big changing years.
Mm-hmm.
Some are a little behind, obviously. Some are a little ahead, and they're ahead in terms of maturity and circulating testosterone. There is a normal range, and we try to address that. A kid will come in, he's 14, he said, gee, I'm so scrawny, I'm really worried. Should I start taking testosterone? And we can address that in a moment.
Okay,
yeah. It's a very important issue.
So how would you agree with puberty in males starts? It begins somewhere between 9.5, 9.8 to probably 14 years of age, probably the mean being around 11, 12?
I would say, maybe pushing a little bit more to the right. But,
okay.
But as again, I am not a pediatrician.
Right, I know.
So I don't want to get into an area that I see them mostly when they are mature, when they have sexual problems or are confused with all the changes that testosterone brings. But it's certainly, I think that range is a fair enough range.
Okay.
And we all know it when we see it. All of a sudden we're sprouting muscles, and all of a sudden we have pubic hair, and all of a sudden the young guys are getting erections at unexpected and embarrassing moments. So that all goes hand in glove.
Well, it seems like the whole development of the puberty is really relatively predictable. It's a predictable series of events. I mean, you've talked about, the voice changes, the facial hair. Would you just share with us maybe, I know you're not a pediatrician, the way that it occurs, just for the listening audience. Overall, what do you think happens first? I mean, I'm thinking of the testicular enlargement, and then, the penis increases in length and girth, just for the listening audience, so they have an idea of what to anticipate. And I'm thinking particularly of the parents. Parents are the ones who seem to be having to deal with this change from child to man.
The difference, obviously, maybe this is overly simplistic, but I think it gets the point across to your listening audience. The thing that separates the boys from the girls is testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So testosterone is what drives all of the changes, testicular enlargement, increase in spermatogenesis, penis enlargement, pubic hair, facial hair, upper body muscles, particularly the arms and the chest and the legs. So that's all driven by testosterone. And to a young boy, and again, some boys go through what I would call a lightning change, in which, you know, almost overnight, a boy becomes a man, and other adolescents go through a sort of a slower transition. But mm-hmm. it's recognizable to everybody.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, he used to be the tenor in the church choir, and now he's kind of a crackling baritone, and all of a sudden he's, able to lift, the 50-pound garbage pail with one hand, and he said, where's that little squirt that we had here yesterday? Nobody expects an adolescent male to go to a urologist and have his blood drawn to see what his circulating serum testosterone is, but even to a layman, the visual changes are striking,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be addressed. Some parents feel comfortable addressing those changes, and kids feel comfortable in asking, a male to his father or a male to a father figure in his life. Hey, Dad, I woke up in the morning and I had this woody. What do I do with that, Dad? Sure, it is. I don't know if it's appropriate for your audience, Liz, but we also have today. The fact that there are a lot of men that are homosexual or bisexual or transsexual.
Mm-hmm. I plan to address that. Yep, we do.
So, here you have all of these complications or all of these challenges for the maturing male with the raging hormones. And if you add on that questions of his sexuality, goodness gracious, that is an almost unbearable burden. And yet, if a boy likes a boy, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not an illness. We don't criticize it. He has the same emotions, the same anxiety, the same jealousy that a boy has to a girl. It's just to a boy.
I'm talking with urologist Dr. Dudley Danoff. We're going to take a break and we'll return shortly. I'm talking with urologist Dr. Dudley Danoff. He's the author of The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. Dr. Danoff is a requested guest on national television and radio programs. He's a graduate of Princeton University and Yale Medical School. Dr. Danoff, what happens when that boy's penis has a mind of his own?
So, that is the nature of man. When a man gets an erection, I don't care if he's a young man or an old man or a middle-aged man, the blood immediately rushes from his brain to the tip of his penis. And we know that, and certainly every woman in the world knows that. For a teen, that really becomes a little overwhelming, and it's very, very difficult for them to deal with that. And they most need a little counseling. Most need support, either from peers or from parents or from health professionals. That is a very, very difficult transition, and many young teenage boys don't handle it very well.
Yeah. One thing we didn't touch on, and I just want to have you just address it a little bit, is that there is also breast development in males.
There is, but not in the same way as a female. Gynecomastia in a young male is probably an abnormal finding.
Mm-hmm.
There is development of the pectoral muscles, which sometimes give the kind of the illusion that there is a little gynecomastia or breast enlargement in the male. But if there's an excessive breast enlargement in a male, a pubescent male, it's time to see the endocrinologist or the doctor. to make sure that there is not some hormonal imbalance or some underlying problem. But gynecomastia or breast enlargement in a pubescent boy is not a normal finding.
Okay. And that's what I wanted you to say, because I wanted you to address some of the concerns that parents should be aware of which says you need to go see a physician with your son. What are some of the things that some of the abnormalities are, the physical differences that sons may see, young males may see, that are assigned to maybe you need to have this checked out further?
Well, certainly if a child gets to be 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 in a male, and you don't see the changes that we often identify with puberty, which we talked about earlier in the program, we don't see height, we don't see muscle development, we don't see facial hair, we don't see pubic hair, we don't see enlargement of the testicles, or in fact maybe non-descent of the testicle, so-called undescended testes, or penis enlargement, or the young man is not complaining of, quote, morning wood, as we say in the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that should alert a parent or a guardian. And there may be, as I say, some underlying endocrine abnormality. Now, I would say in my experience, having been a urologic surgeon, I'm dealing with this issue for more than 30 years, that is actually rare, a delayed puberty.
Okay.
But if it becomes obvious that it is the case, that certainly needs to be investigated by a health professional.
Okay. What about testicular cancer? Should teens do I was going to ask you, should they do self-exams, and would you talk about testicular cancer and what are the signs and how it should be addressed?
Yeah, that's really an excellent question. So, first of all, testicular cancer is a relatively rare disease. So the statistics are about 9 cases in 100,000 males. So statistically, it's a small number. However, the overwhelming majority of testicular cancers occur in young men, usually late teens, early 20s. So for all maturing men, self-examination is very important. And I emphasize that a lot in my book and my talking and to my students. It's best done when the scrotum is very relaxed. So that would be after a warm shower or a warm bath or under the warm blankets when the scrotal skin is very, very relaxed. A man should examine his testes, I would say a pubescent male, about once a month. The testicle should feel like a hard-boiled egg without the shell.
Okay.
It should be firm. It should be smooth. It should be symmetrical. There should be no lumps or bumps. And if any of those things are present, a lump or a bump or an irregularity or an asymmetry, I think it's important that the adolescent boy see a urologist, get a testicular ultrasound, which is a non-invasive test, to be certain that what they're feeling isn't significant. One more thing, just another thought about testicular cancer, Liz. So testicular cancer, decades ago was a lethal disease. Every 95% of men with what we call germ cell cancers, would not be alive in 10 years. Today, there have been tremendous, tremendous strides in the treatment and the chemotherapy of even metastatic testicular cancer. A football player was noted to have testicular cancer, metastatic, and received treatment and got back to play in the NFL. And a fellow who won the Tour de France.
Armstrong. Right.
Had metastatic testicular cancer to his brain. Mm-hmm. And not only was treated successfully, but went on to be, the fact that he was doping at the end of his career, we could have discounted, but, went on to be one of the great cyclists in the history of the sport.
Yeah. Well, when we look at males, are there other typical health issues that you feel like teen males need to be aware of?
Yeah, I want to address this whole concept of, I guess, in the vernacular, they say juicing.
Yes, that so, was. Okay.
There are many, you know, fellas, young fellas that are a little slow to develop. You know, they're not as big as
exactly.
You know, the linebacker on the school football team or the left tackle, and they think that by taking exogenous testosterone. Usually by injection. I mean, there's no testosterone preparation that can be taken by mouth because it's very toxic to the liver. So you open any male magazine or any sports magazine, and there's all sorts of advertisement. But what happens if a young man takes exogenous testosterone, so-called juicing? So it sends a signal to his pituitary gland, which is a brain gland, that regulates how testosterone is generated in the body. And if a boy is juicing or taking exogenous testosterone, it sends a signal to the pituitary to shut off the testicles so that they don't produce testosterone. It's kind of a internal regulatory mechanism. Well, the pituitary says, I'm testing the circulating testosterone. The kid is juicing. His testosterone is very high. I'm going to send a signal to his testes to just shut down. They don't need to work anymore. And what happens is you get these magnificent athletes, bodybuilders, sometimes famous actors, and I've seen more than a few of them, with huge muscles, perfectly chiseled bodies, and teeny testicles, and testicles which are infertile. I mean, it's a tragedy. So absolutely no consideration of exogenous testosterone, no form of juicing is acceptable. It would be insane.
So what you're saying is it has a counterproductive, even a harmful effect on male reproductive health.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
You know, there's very few things, Liz, in this world that are 100%, but this is one of them.
Okay, so
that's a really huge red flag.
Okay. Well, I know it certainly is a trend. Taking steroids,
I mean,
you see it everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's the skinny little kid, you know, wanting to be the big muscular guy. Well, you know, let him get a subscription to the local gym and start, you know, pumping iron and that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing, many males report being sexually active at an early age. I guess approximately, maybe 50% have had sexual intercourse before the age of 18. The issue here, of course, is unprotected sex and pregnancy and STIs and, you know, the fact that they don't use condoms consistently. I wanted to have you address this. This is a real concern, you know, not so much just because of the pregnancy, but the STIs and...
Yes.
So if you would...
They call them STIs or STDs. It's just your choice. Yeah. So, look, unprotected sex is tantamount to insanity. I know it sort of feels like taking a shower with your socks on, but... it is really, it's the first rule of any urologist, it's the first rule of any sensible person, especially a teen, when you're not quite certain of the sexual history of your partners. It's particularly important and essential in a homosexual male or a bisexual male or a transsexual male. Because there are certain practices that are at extremely high risk with specific reference to anal intercourse. But even barring that, unless you're 100% sure of the entire sexual history of who your partner is, because their entire previous sexual history is a template, I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, condoms are a must. I mean, it's like sex 101, and it takes discipline, It takes foresight. It's like being a Boy Scout. You better be prepared if you're going to have sex. But it's an absolute must. There's no way around it.
Okay. As we talk about puberty and its evolution, I guess, what influence does nutrition have on the onset and the duration of puberty?
Well, as in all things in life, a good healthy diet, a lean, trim, mean fighting machine is far better than a big flabby old piece of blubber. So, look, a meticulous diet, high in proteins, low in fats, low in sugar, low in carbs, associated with a vigorous exercise program, plenty of fruits and vegetables, stay away from, things which are high in cholesterol, fatty acids. I mean, that is just an overall healthy diet. And whether it be for a teen or a tweener or a middle-aged person or an older person, good diet, lean body fat, good muscle mass is essential to both good health and good sex. I mean, sex is a pretty vigorous sport. You have to have upper body strength. You have to have lower body strength. I mean, if you're going to be good at it, you have to have some endurance. So all of those bespeak to a healthy lifestyle. And for example, kind of a silly example maybe, but if you look at a porno film, I mean, you never see a fat porno guy.
That's true.
because I'll tell you why. Because the penis arises from underneath the pubic bone. And if you have a 2 or 3 inch, what we call a prepubic fat pad or big protuberant lower belly, and you look down, your penis has to come out from under the pubic bone. It then has to traverse 3 or 4 inches, of fat, and there's not much left. all of those are important factors, and self-image. Mm-hmm. You want to look in the mirror. You want to see somebody lean and mean. It improves your self-image. It improves your ability to relate to other people. It promotes a positive attitude, all of which are not only good for sex, but I think they're good for life.
Right, right. Which ties right into my next question, which would be the role of exercise. Because you talk about the need for strength and endurance. What role does exercise play?
Well, again, I mean, not to be redundant, and it seems almost too obvious to even state. It's absolutely key. I mean, it goes hand in glove with a good diet, certainly no smoking, particularly in teens, and God help me for saying this, but no vaping.
Oh, yeah.
That has to be, total insanity, but smoking is terrible. I don't want to talk about the funny cigarettes, but because as an older guy, it's hard for me to relate to it, but I see all these kids doing that.
Well,
I think,
and it's legal out there, isn't it?
Okay. It's certainly alcohol and a very, very sensible exercise program should be part of your daily routine. I mean, I think it strengthens your body and it clears your mind and it gets you ready for, the tough world, especially if you're a teen. It's a jungle out there, Jane, as somebody said once in a famous movie. I mean, it's tough out there. You've got to be prepared physically and mentally, and you've got to be, you've got to be in good shape to deal with it.
Well, as we talk about this, from your perspective, what role does the internet play in the male teen behavior?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to be, it hits them from all directions.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your feel.
That's a great question. Not too many people have asked me that, but I think almost exclusively it's a negative. Look, there's a lot of good stuff on the internet. I ask Siri you know, 10 times a day. She's she's very helpful for things that I don't know or want to know. But there's a lot of pornography. There's a lot of unrealistic sex. There's a lot of misogyny.
Yep.
And it's all available to the teens. They all know what buttons to push and, you know, what to see and how to see it. And they're exposed to things that are false. They're magnified. They run the tape backwards and forward and inside out. And it's just an absolute warped view of sexuality. And a lot of teens get addicted to it, and they think that is reality. And I think it has a profoundly negative effect on sexual maturity, the process of sexual maturity, you know, from a teen to an adult. And I think it's sad, and I think it's dangerous, and I actually don't know how you control it.
Yeah, and it seems like so many teens get their information, whether correct or incorrect, they seem to get it from the Internet.
Yeah, well, of course.
About and everything.
And the Internet, particularly in its portrayal of sex, is make-believe.
Yeah.
First of all, you have... Most of the men that you see on the Internet, I mean, it's certainly in pornography, are like on the, you know, the narrow end of the bell-shaped curve.
You're tuned into 411 Teen. I am talking about teen male development. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
411 Teen is the conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with Dr. Dudley Danoff.
You know, we're talking about the Internet, the influence on young people, developing teens, their psychosexual development. And I said they all have access, you know, to this sort of unlimited stream of pornography, which is completely fake. You know, the males mostly that are portrayed, you know, have genitalia, which are on what we call the narrow end of the bell-shaped curve. They're hardly average. They run the tape backwards, forwards, you know, tricks of magnification, of lighting. It's a totally unrealistic portrayal of what sex is about. It's misogynistic. It's totally negative influence. And unfortunately, even though I am a health professional, super well educated with, you know, years and years of experience, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how you can stop it.
No.
And I think it's, you know, I think it's influencing the whole generation or more of young people in a way that I don't know what the ultimate damage will be, but I can't help but think it's got to be damaging.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're seeing that. I mean, it's damaging in relationships. It's damaging in psychological development. I guess there is some good to it if used sparingly. That's
well, yeah. I mean, like anything.
Sure, right.
you want to have a you know, chocolate fudge cake. I'm not against it, but I wouldn't do it morning, noon, and you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
That's true. I wanted to ask you to talk and you touched on this a little bit, but the use of alcohol and marijuana. In the adolescent population, they are much more likely to binge drink and then drive while intoxicated.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and...
Well, again, you know, lack of judgment, you know, inexperience. I mean, we all drink. Many of my friends drink to moderation, and even physicians I know. But we know how to control it. We're adults. We've all, you know,
had our day
in the college fraternity where we, you know, lying on the street drunk. And so you learn from those experiences. You know, unfortunately, the binge drinking, they haven't learned. So unless
there's and they're so young. I mean, you're talking
psychologically wrong. You know, you binge drink and you get deathly sick, and you'll never do it again.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but and my point is, they're doing it so young. Not that binge drinking is good at any time, but you're talking about college. We're talking now about high school.
Yes,
and middle school.
I hear that loud and clear. And unfortunately, there's a little narrow window. If you do it, you know, once or twice before you learn your lessons, you know, you might be endangering yourself and all those around you. So. You know, if you see something, say something.
Yes.
You see a friend, you know, getting into trouble, I think it's your, as a teen, it's your responsibility to, you know, hey, buddy. You know what? Not encourage him and cheer him on. And, you know, and if you make a mistake and you don't see it and don't correct it, you're destined to repeat it.
Yeah. Time is flying. Let's look at these special populations. Puberty is challenging enough, but when a young boy is attracted to another young boy, it creates confusion and anxiety and on. What are the unique health concerns of the gay or bisexual male teen?
Well, you know, to compound his raging hormones and dealing, you know, with the morning woody and this sort of insatiable drive for sex. He now has to deal, that young man, with who he is as a sexual person. Is he a boy that likes girls? Is he a boy that likes boys? Is he a boy that likes boys and girls?
Mm-hmm.
So it just adds another, you know, another dimension of complexity to a very confusing time in a young person's life. I think sexuality is for me a mystery. People really don't quite understand it. There've been thousands of tomes written about it. It's a very complex, and it's influenced by physical conditions and environmental conditions and childhood development, but it's a very tough one to deal with. So the other question would be about coming out. That to a health professional is a very delicate area. It's very individualistic. I think it's very important that when a bisexual or gay male comes out, he has to do it in an environment where he feels safe, where he feels comfortable, where he doesn't feel threatened. So, again, liking a boy liking another boy, or a boy liking sexually a boy or a girl, or both, I mean, it's not a disease.
No.
And as I said earlier in the program, they have the same passion, the same jealousy, the same feelings, but instead of it being to a girl, it's to another boy.
Mm-hmm.
So we as health professionals do not see it as a disease. We do not see it even as an abnormality. It's just a variant of human behavior, and we have to deal with it. Now, with the homosexual or bisexual male, we talk about the use of condoms. It becomes even more compelling, particularly because of the possibility of anal intercourse, which is a little bit more common in that population group. Anything in that area without a condom is like Russian roulette. You might as well put a gun to your head and pull the trigger and hope that there isn't a bullet in the chamber.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Tough stuff.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
I wanted you to talk some about your book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. Just for the listening audience, you know, some of the issues, and I know some of them we've already talked about, that
right.
you address in that book. I know it's been out, and it's very, very well respected, and wanted to have you address it.
Well, it's the second edition, which is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in the bookstores. It deals with every aspect of male sexuality. It's funny. It's tongue-in-cheek. I mean, how could you, you know, talk about the penis and male sexuality without a smile on your face or a sense of humor? And it's simply written. It's easy for the layman to understand it. It's kind of lighthearted. But there's all kinds of information in there. And so I encourage your listeners to go and take a look at it. It's an easy read, and I think they're gonna like what they see.
Do you have any suggestions as to how parents may engage their male teens to communicate? Females tend to be more open. With males, they seem to be more reluctant than females to discuss whatever the issue may be, whether it's mental health, whether it's relationships, or sexuality. And I know that you deal with young males, young adult male adults. How do you, and it may be easier because you are a male, but how do you suggest, any suggestions that you may offer to the parents to engage them? Because so often, you know, parents have a difficult time. Even though it's 2019, it seems like parents have a difficult time talking about sexuality.
Well,
for whatever the reason. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail right on the head, Liz. You know, sexuality and teens and parents is a tough gig, as they say in the trade. It's particularly tough with men because the nature of male is we want to be machismo. We're indestructible. Mm-hmm. We want to, you know, catch the winning touchdown pass in the last minute of the Super Bowl. So we don't want to talk about any frailties. We don't want to talk about any perceived weakness. And so it's particularly, so I think it's incumbent upon a parent to be very, very sensitive, you know, that the boys and teen boys in particular are very reluctant to talk about any sexual issues or certainly sexual failures or anything they're concerned about. So it's a very delicate dance. I think it takes a lot of sensitivity on the part of the parent. It's like being a great chess player, you know, when to speak up, when to shut up, when to hold them, when to fold them.
Well, that's right.
And I think, you know, an intelligent, caring parent has to be aware of that and tread lightly. But I think they should try to open some channel of communication because the teen is confused. And, you know, a good, solid parent talking from the perspective of experience is going to be invaluable in that adolescent psychosexual development.
And the key to so much of this, the basis, is communication. Well, because if they communicate, they can therefore be educated. They can also find out that some of their concerns are normal. This is what is expected. You know, so communication is really very important.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I think in any, you know, interhuman relationship, whether it be with a partner, with a lover, man or female, with a wife, with a husband, with a business associate, with a school associate, communication is the key to everything. If I have a problem or I'm angry at you, I can't keep it inside and let it boil over and smolder. I have to come out and say, hey, you know, I've got a problem here. This is the problem. Let's discuss it. Let's do the pros and the cons. So communication for me is a skill which cuts across the lines of sexuality, of interhuman relationship, of interpersonal relationships. So communication to me is the key to all success.
Okay. I'm sure there comes time where you encounter males, young males, teens, young adults, who may be depressed or who may have suicidal ideations. And these ideations may be manifested through agitation and aggression, But would you talk about that? Because these feelings also need to be handled and taken seriously. And in your practice, even though you're a urologist, I'm sure you encounter that. How do you handle it?
Well, so let me say right at the top that I certainly am not a psychiatrist.
Oh, no. No.
But I certainly can recognize in treating a patient or in speaking with a patient or examining a patient or interacting with a patient, I can certainly understand and appreciate anger.
Right.
Now, you know, we rarely, if ever, have a schoolyard shooter who's a lady or a
right.
girl.
Yeah.
So this is about testosterone. This is about raging hormones that are raging in a body and a mind of a person that's not really ready to handle the consequence of a rapidly increasing serum testosterone. Maybe that's an overly simplistic, way or explanation of why. And I think the only hope there is if you see something, say something. If you feel something, notify somebody. Don't say, he's just acting out. I think in order to protect society against this aberrant behavior driven by testosterone, some exogenous person has to recognize that there's a problem and deal with it head on. I don't know any other way you can solve the problem.
Right. I mean, and I think about just even the presence, and I know we're digressing a little bit, but the presence of firearms in the home.
That's a whole different issue.
Mm-hmm.
Why we as a civilized society don't have, sensible gun control laws is, it's just beyond my imagination. I'm a healer. I spent my whole life putting people together.
Mm-hmm.
And, see this insanity with rapid fire, automatic military weapons is crazy.
Yeah, I just want, I wonder, it's good to hear you say this because it makes you wonder how we continue on this pathway.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, we are seeing what it's ravaging our communities.
Yeah, look around the world.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other civilized country in the world that has this problem.
I know.
And it's, so I'm not denying anybody who likes to hunt.
Not at all.
Yeah. But this craziness with unregulated firearms, AK, whatever the AK number is, just to me as a health professional is beyond anything I can imagine.
Well, in these last 2 minutes, I'd like to ask you to at least address or comment on the influence of culture on puberty in teen males.
Well, that about takes in the whole of my professional career.
Right.
So look, it's really about a sensible approach. It's about trying to understand the rapid changes that a pubescent male in particular will go through, which is my specialty. It's the ability to recognize if there's something wrong. There's the ability to try to understand all of these changes and deal with them. And if there is a problem, to recognize it. I mean, you can't solve a problem until you identify it as a problem. And if there is a problem, get on it. There's a lot of health professionals around who are equipped to help you, whether it be medication, advice, or whatever. We're equipped to do it. But let us know about it. Let us be out there to help you. Be sensible. Do what's age appropriate. Understand that there are changes, and not everybody matures at the same rate or at the same pace. Good luck.
Well, Dr. Danoff, I really appreciate you taking the time to just share your knowledge and expertise with us. Unfortunately, it's time out. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Again, many thanks to Dr. Dudley Danoff for the valuable information on teen male health. And to my listening audience, appreciation for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.